talk about some of the things that are found in 37. We may have looked at already at some of those things. But Elihu is that good friend who is like a lot of preacher. He says a lot of stuff, but whenever you hit, when he's finished, you think, okay, but what's that have to do with anything? I mean, true enough, God is almighty and God is mighty, and there's some great truths that are stated here. Whenever you think about God being almighty in everything, because that's exactly what God is. But you know, what does that have to do with Job? If you stop and think about it, now he never makes the application. I guess that's a way of saying it. When I was a younger preacher, I had no concept at all of application of a sermon. I'd just get 3 points and a good closing, good invitation song or something, and I'd get up and fire away. And one of the things that we talk about to our young people in this leadership training class, whenever they outline a lesson and whether they preach it or not publicly or teach a class publicly or not, one of the things is the introduction and the conclusion. That's obvious. But we've added another step, and that is an application step. Because a sermon isn't worth anything until it gets right down where people live. And it's really, really important for us to recognize it. And I really think that's part of Elihu. I mean, when God says Job's three friends, what they've said is not right, that's true. And so it's obvious that those first three friends that talked about the fact that Job, you're a sinner in every respect. Elihu's approach is different. Elihu's approach is, God is so much greater than Job, you don't need to talk so much. And that is true. There's an element of truth in relationship to that. And so you see that. Let's start in chapter 37. At this also my heart trembles, starting in verse 1, and leaps from its place. Hear attentively the thunder of his voice. I suspect that depending on how much of an orator Elihu was, if I were preaching this sermon, I wouldn't say, and hear the thunder of his voice. That's not that. I don't believe that's the way you said it. I believe he said, whenever God speaks, hear the thunder of his voice. Can you imagine how loud God talks? I mean, he talks about this. It's like the thunder of his voice. Look down at verse 4. And then his voice roars. After it, a voice roars. He thunders with his majestic voice. Look at verse 5. God thunders marvelously with his voice. The next time you happen to be around one of those places where there's a lightning that strikes very close to you, how loud does that sound? I don't know how close you've been to lightning strikes and everything, but Elihu says, that's the voice of God. Sometimes, you know, we don't see the magnitude of how great God is, and so we think about, well, he talked about as loud as any man I ever heard. No, he talks louder than the thunder. And then he also talks about the lightning that is there. It talks about the rumbling that comes from his mouth. I'm back up in verse 2. He sends it forth under the whole heaven, his lightnings to the ends of the earth. I don't know about you, but I'm fascinated by lightning. I love watching lightning storms, don't you? I mean, it's just I remember being in a plane years ago, flew right through the middle of a lightning storm. It's pretty exciting. Don't want to do it again, I remember that experience and everything. But isn't it amazing just to see lightning that starts over here and just shoots not down to the earth, but just shoots from one cloud to the other? And so Elihu is saying, listen, Job, God is almighty, and you need to understand that his voice is mighty. Look what he introduces in verse 6. God is almighty. God makes snow. Isn't that remarkable? I try to put myself in Job's place, and we're going to talk a little bit later. God's going to talk about who makes ice. And how on earth can God turn water into that which is like a rock? Imagine being Job and not know anything about 212 and 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Imagine being that. And all of a sudden you get up one morning and it's cold, but the pond is still okay. And then you get up another morning and it looks like it's got a little something on it. Then all of a sudden it gets thick enough to walk on it. I remember a fellow student at Fried Hardeman that came back after spring break and he'd been home and said, Leon said, what happened? He said, man, I had the greatest fun on earth. Said, I got there and the pond was frozen. I got on the tractor and I drove that tractor sliding that thing all over the pond. It was the greatest thing, you know. He said, then I had a little problem. The ice melted and I sunk my dad's tractor down inside the pond when the ice broke. You think about it. Where's ice come from? I know you can give the scientific explanation of it, but having given all of that, you still don't know where it comes from. What about snow? And so Elihu is talking about the magnitude of this, and then he says he seals the hand of every man, and I think that is he puts in the presence of every man a seal of his existence. It may be different from that. That all men may know his works. How on earth would all men know that God exists? Is there a verse in the Bible that talks about how everybody knows that God exists? How they can know it?
Romans 1.
Well, I was in another one, but yeah, Romans 1 by the things that have been. What about one of the Psalms? The heavens declare the glory of God. And the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day, it speaks. I'm paraphrasing it. Every day, it's brand new. Day unto day, utter his speech. And night unto night, shows the very knowledge of God. And then having talked about the wonders of the day and the wonders of the night, he says, for there is no language or voice on this earth. There's not any language that's spoken anywhere on this earth where the voice of the heavens saying the ears of God is not heard. That's pretty powerful. And that's the very truth that Elihu is trying to comes about. Well, this is where the ice is. Look in verse 9. There's the matter of the whirlwind. If I'm understanding the difference, you know, the massive winds that blow and things of that nature. Whirlwind is more like a tornado. If we talk about terminology that you and I would understand, it's not the hurricane, it's the tornado. And from the chambers of the south comes the tornadoes. And then verse 10, by the breath of God, ice is given, and the broad waters are frozen. Also with moisture, he saturates the thick clouds. He scatters the bright clouds. And so Elihu says, look down at verse 14. Listen to this, Job, stand still and consider the wondrous works of God. You think Job had not already done that? That'd be like me saying that to you. Well, I think it's about time you notice that how beautiful the sunset is, or how beautiful the sunrise is. Job's been doing that all of his life. He's been hearing the voice of God that announces his existence. And he says, do you not know that the Lord dispatches them and causes the light of the clouds to shine? And then there's that description of the clouds that are there. In verse 18, with him, have you spread out the skies, strong as a coat metal mirrors? Teach us what we should say to him, for we can prepare nothing because of the darkness. Should he be told that I wish to speak? Job, you have no right, because God is so great, you have no right to talk to God. Do you? Yeah. Have you not really almost argued with God in the midst of adversity? I don't mean in a bad sense. But have you not in the midst of adversity said, why God, why did this happen? You have that right. And so here's Elihu that says, Job, God is unapproachable. And the mistake that you've made, and it's a mistake that my friends have not really pointed out, is that that you do not have any right to speak to him. Look at verse 21. Even now men cannot look at the light when it is bright in the skies. Did you ever, as a child, is this only dumb kids from Alabama doing this? See who can look at the sun the longest? Nobody else ever did that, okay. Just how long can you look at this? You can't do it. You're forced to turn away. And we understand the blinding nature of light, but isn't light one of the ways God manifests himself? And so he says, Job, you know, you need to recognize the grandeur of God. And then we'll look at verse 23. You agree with this? As for the Almighty, we cannot find him. He's excellent in power, in judgment, and abundant justice. He does not oppress, therefore men fear him. He shows no partiality to any who are wise of heart, but you cannot find God. I don't believe that. Think about, you'll find me when you search for me with all of your heart. I found him. Did not that disciple come, was it Andrew that said to Philip, we found the Messiah. We found the one the prophets have talked about. You know, did we not have that evidence there in the finding God? And yet Elihu just says, no, you really cannot find God. Look in chapter 38. In chapter 38, there is this discussion about where we change direction, and that is where the Lord answers Job. We've got 37 chapters, and God has not said anything to anybody on this earth. Now, we know the conversation that there was in heaven, but we have got all of these chapters, and we got every one of these chapters, and finally, God is going to say, Job, you and I need to talk. I don't know if you had parental experience or not. I remember I dreaded my dad spanking me, but I dreaded far more that talk we had before he spanked me. Job, you and I need to talk. Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? I think that's an interesting description of a lot of preaching. It darkens the counsel of God because there are words that have no knowledge behind them. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? I mean, you stop and think about all that is done in the name of Jesus and people saying, God told me this and God told me that. And God says, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Job, stand up and be a man. How'd you like for God to say, now prepare yourself like a man. I've got a few questions for you, and I want you to answer me. Job, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have any understanding. You got the answer to that? At what point did you become an entity? If he's the father of our spirits, were you a spirit before you were spirit placed in? I don't know. Job, you need to understand some things. You don't really have all the answers. And Job's affirmation in this book, the way I've been reading this book, he's not saying I've not sinned. His friends are saying, you've sinned, just confess what you've done. And he said, no, the adversity that's in my life is not because of personal sin in my life. Which shows good people do suffer bad things. And his friends are on the other page. Anybody that's is in the midst of it. But God says, Job, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have an understanding. Who determined its measurement?
How far is the earth away from the sun? What do we say? How do we answer that? 93 million miles. Is it always 93 million miles? No. That orbit that it has around the sun, and you know that the earth doesn't spin on an axis that's up this way. Earth spins on an axis that's this way. That's why you have winter and summer. Because when the earth is tilted in this way, the rays of the sun come brighter on the southern hemisphere than they do on the northern hemisphere. Guess what you've got? You've got summer down in the southern hemisphere, and you've got winter over the northern hemisphere. But you move that thing all the way over here, and here's the sun shining over this way, and now you've got the northern hemisphere, and the sunlight's hitting it first. I hope I haven't got that backwards, Dirk. You're the scientist here and everything. But who figured all that out? What if the earth were only 90 million miles from the sun? What do you reckon our summers would be like? What if the earth were 97 million miles from the earth? Who figured all that out? Who laid the measurements of the earth? Job, tell me that. God says, in the beginning, God's created. Wait a minute, Job, before I do this, could you tell me what the diameter of the earth ought to be and what the circumference of the earth ought to be? And could you tell me exactly how you get all of that water on this earth? And by the way, could you tell me about how it can keep raining and raining and raining, and yet the sky never runs out of water? Job, think of that. Tell me how we're going to handle all of that. And where were you, Job, when all of this happened? And who says, whoever stretched a line upon it? That's a tape measure. Job, where were you when I set all this in motion? Answer me, Job, if you think that you've got all the answers. And to what is the earth founded? That's in verse 6. To what were the foundations fashioned? I want you to go back to the time of Job. What's the earth resting on? Now, I know Job says by inspiration he hangs the earth upon nothing. But God says to Job, Job, tell me, here's the measurement of the earth. Here it is. What's it sitting on? Answer me, Job. And you and I struggle to even figure that out ourselves. When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy, where were you, Job, when I created this earth? Or, who shuts the doors of the sea? Who decides how far up the tide will come? Who decides, that this continent or this island is going to be in this place? God said, I set the doors of the sea when it burst forth and issued from the wombs. When I made the cloud its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band. Job, I put clouds all the way around this earth. It's like a garment. Now, Job, how'd I make that happen? Tell me, Job, tell me about clouds, Job. Tell me all about this. And then he says, when I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors, when I said, and evidently this is to the seas and to bodies of water, this is as far as you can come. Thus, this far you may come, but no farther. And here your proud ways must stop. What if the creation were such that whenever that tide came in, it just kept climbing up over the beach and just kept... Ask the folks in Houston. By the way, being in Houston for Thanksgiving to be with Jonathan and Julie... Houston sank under the weight of that water and is now a fraction of an inch lower than it used to be. The earth is not as thick in Houston as it used to be. Job, do you know I could do that? Tell me, Job, if you've got all of this, verse 11, he said, they changed his direction. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? Where does morning come from? Job, tell me, and go back and be primitive. Go back and be a primitive man, and by that I don't mean caveman, I just mean we've got a whole lot of understanding because we had third grade science. You know, we found out the earth is not geocentric, it's heliocentric, that the middle of the universe is not the earth, or at least of our solar system, it's the sun. At least that's what we've been taught. And let's talk about this this dawn. And then he says, to know its place. Who sets the limit of dawn, light and darkness? I remember as a child, I had an uncle that always asked cute little things. And he said, Dan, where was Moses when the lights went out? And I didn't know the cute little answer he was going to give. He was in the dark. You ever thought about what happens when you turn that light switch off? Ophelia, when tonight you turn that light switch off, tell me where that light goes. What happens to light? It's all over that room. Where's it go? And why does all of a sudden the light become submissive to the darkness? And I know you can give all these scientific answers, but Job is just saying to God, you don't know it. What about this? Have you entered into the springs of the sea? You know, 200 years ago, we didn't understand some things we understand now. If you walked out here in West Palm Beach, walked out down on the beach, and it just gets a little deeper and a little bit more deeper and a little bit deep, what would be your estimation about what the earth looks like underneath? Well, it just gradually slopes all the way to Europe, and then it slopes back up on the other side. And if you wanted to take a real good afternoon stroll, just get you some scuba gear and just walk from here to London. Just let's have a marathon between. No, it's not that way. And yet, Jonah talks about the mountains that were under the sea. Whenever they threw him out, he describes the mountains that are there under. How would anybody ever know there are mountains under the sea? We know it. I mean, your grandfather got National Geographic, didn't he? You understand? But here's the amazing thing. Unbeknownst to mankind, and probably, I said 200 years ago, it's probably been within the last 100 years they know, there are just places in the ocean where fresh water springs up in the midst of all of that salt water that's there. Job, you know about that? Do you know about the springs of the sea? I stand amazed at how smart we think we are. And we're still in the kindergarten in relationship to discovering these things. When you were in school, how old were you? What was the smallest particle there was in the universe?
The atom.
It's called the atom. Sixth, seventh grade science. First time I ever heard the word. Atomic bomb was non-existent. I guess it was in existence by sixth or seventh grade. But the smallest thing there is on this earth is an atom. How wrong is that? In my lifetime, we've gone all the way over to talk about matter, and I have no idea what antimatter is. And I don't get the concept of black holes. I have no idea. Light and gravitation so pull, it was so strong it won't even let the light get out. And so you just got a hole in the sky, a black hole. You can tell I'm a real scientist from what I'm trying to talk about right here. But he says the springs of the... What about verse 17? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? What happens when you die? Now, you take the New Testament out and you limit yourself to the Old Testament and you'll have an understanding why the Bible said that Jesus brought immortality into the light through the gospel, through the New Testament. Job, tell me, when you go through the gates of death, where are those gates? And what's on the other side? That's profound in relationship to that. Or have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the breadth of the earth? Tell me, stand up, Job. Tell me the answer to these questions. You know what Job's going to say?
I don't know.
I should have kept my mouth shut. That's where he's headed. But this is so, where is the way for the dwelling of light? That's sort of the question Ophelia asked you, I think, is where'd it go? Room's full of light and all of a sudden it's not there. Where'd it go? I know there's an energy source that's interacting because some molecule or some atom or proton or neutron or electron or I don't know. I just turned the switch on and it works every time. And when I turn it off, it's gone. Tell me the path of darkness, Job. Tell me the pathway. Tell me the dwelling place of light. And while you're doing it, explain darkness to me. Do you really think we understand everything there is to know about light? Do you really think we've delved into what light is and to what darkness is? Oh, we've got it all figured out because we are so much part of so much. Now, Job, you've got all the answers. Look at verse 21. Do you know it? Because you were born. Because you were born then, or because the number of your days is so great. Job, have you been here since I laid the foundation of the earth? And you've lived this long, and therefore you have all of these things. Have you entered, he says, into the treasury of snow? You know snow is worth money? You ever heard of nitrogen as a fertilizer or nitrates as a fertilizer? Guess what happens when it snows? It doesn't happen when it rains. And that is those little snowflakes that are up there in some way collect particles of that which becomes nitrates from the nitrogen that's in the atmosphere. And that snow brings down nitrates to this earth and fertilizes this earth. And so if you have a good snowstorm here in South Florida, just don't put out as much fertilizer next year. The treasury of snow. There may be something deeper than that. And I've thought when I read this when I was a kid in some of Harry Reamer's books and everything, some of those evidences books that go way back, I thought, well, we got it all figured out. I don't know if we got it all figured out yet or not. There may be even far more than that. Have you seen the treasure of hailstones, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? Hailstones? Did God ever bring hailstones as a judgment? What about one of the plagues down in the land of Egypt? manifestation of the wrath of God. Gets back to light, verse 24. By what way is light diffused? Or the east wind scatters over all the earth. Now, that's remarkable. Tell me, Job, how all this comes about. And then he gets back to the matter of water. In verse 25, he says, who has divided a channel for the overflowing water or a path for the thunderbolt? How'd you figure that out? To cause it to rain on a land where there is no one, a wilderness in which there is no man. I don't know if there's nobody in the wood when the tree falls, if it makes any noise or not, but I do know that when it rains and nobody's there, the ground gets wet. Job, tell me about all this. Here's the question. Has the rain a father? That's verse 28. Or who has begotten the drops of dew? Garden of Eden may have never had rain because it was wet by the morning dew. That's remarkable. God, did you figure all that out? Yeah. Job, did you figure all that out? No, I'm still working on the first one. I mean, that's that is the reality. Look at verse, 33. Do you know the ordinances of the heavens, the laws of heavens? Can you set their dominion over the earth? Job, can you lift up your voice to the cloud that an abundance of water may cover you? The voice of God, the thunder of God, can bring the rain. Can you send out lightnings that it may go and say, here we are? And I remember some of those Harry Reimers books that I read when I was a kid. Said it was a prophecy about the inventing of the telephone. You know, or telegraph or something. I doubt that's what's in view here. He's just saying, Job, tell me how you send lightning. Tell me how you can do this. Who can number the clouds by wisdom? How many clouds are there, Job? Right this minute around this earth, who has formed all of these clouds and who can pour out the bottles of heaven when it's time to rain? When the dust hardens and clump and the clods cling together. Okay, Job, I'm putting you in charge of finding enough food for all of the lions there are on the earth. You want that job? Can you find the prey for the lions? You want to get on this animal food chain? Who put all that together? Yeah, it's remarkable, is it? You just get over in the fishing aspect of that. Here's a little tiny fish, and guess what happens to that little tiny fish? Somebody eats it, a little bigger fish eats it, and then the next size, and the next size, and the next size, and the next size, and the next size. What if that kept going? What if when you got to whales, something bigger than a whale ate the big whales? You know what whales eat? Jonah. You know what whales eat? The plankton. Gills, they suck in all of that water, and there's enough living substance in that water. Whenever they let that water come out between their teeth, it gives enough food for a whale. That can be, 70 feet long or 100 feet. I don't know how long whales get. Job, tell me about the food chain. Can you hunt the prey for the lions or satisfy the appetites of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lurk in their lairs and wait? Who provides the food for the raven? How would you like to be in charge of ensuring there's enough food for all the birds on this earth? You got a bird? You go to Publix and sometimes you forget to get the bird food. You can't even take care of one bird. I understand they get vicious, right, Sue? If you don't feed those parrots, they'll come at you. You understand what I'm talking about? How would you like to be in charge of knowing that here are all these little robins out looking for all the worms, and you are not only in charge of the robins, you're in charge of the worms. And you got to have the ground soft enough so that worm can dig down inside there and get whatever nutrients it gets from wherever it gets, whatever it gets. How would you like? We cannot even feed one bird. Job, do you really, really think you've got all the answers? Who provides the food for the raven and this and this? When its young ones cry out to whom? To God. That little baby bird in that nest, all alone, mom and daddy birds out, we don't know where. They've always here from the time I hatch, and then all of a sudden they just disappear. And those little birds start chirping. And God says, they're crying out to me to feed them. I preach a sermon sometimes entitled, I think I may have made the point here, you'll never see a skinny bird. You've never seen one. And so I Googled to find out how many birds there are. There are 7 billion people on this earth. Google how many birds are there. Somewhere, and this is only an estimate, not 7 billion, but between 400 and 800 billion birds on this earth. Ready to feed them? You want to talk about the magnitude of our God? You want to talk about the wisdom of God? That's what God is trying to say to Job. Job, you don't have the answers. Job, you don't even understand about suffering, and you and I would not understand about suffering if God had not explained it to us. We'd be exactly where Job was. And his friends, they don't have a clue. Elihu doesn't even try to give an answer. He just says, Job, shut up. You know, and I'm serious about it. Has the second bell rung? Some folks are walking down that hallway there. Am I to the last verse? Yes. Who provides food for the raven when the young cries out to God? In one of the Psalms, Shepherd Boy talks about hearing a lion roar. Remember, delivered me from the paw of the bear and the paw of the lion? And a shepherd boy heard that lion roar. How'd you like to hear a lion roar? You're a shepherd boy, and all of a sudden, and they're not just little mountain cats. There were evidently lions like they're in Africa in biblical times in that part of the world. And David heard that lion roar, and David says, and you know what he's doing? He's praying that God will give him food. Give us this day our daily bread. That's the magnitude of God. Old country boy came into the city, and before he ate his food, he bowed his head. And the city slickers looked at this country boy and said mockingly to him, does everybody do that where you come from? He said, yeah, everybody except the hogs. Don't you dare be a hog. He feeds the birds. They sow not, neither do they reap nor gather into barns, and yet your Father feeds them. You'll never see a skinny bird. Class is over.